Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Cod
Exploding Barrel Cod Piece.
This is where we talk about cod and other whitefish. I think this with this, I would have a white wine.
Oh my god, we have a fishing show now.
For June 12th, 2009. This is me, Mike Tolcoto Minotti, with Adguy Minotti.
I'm waving. I can't see it.
Right, yeah, we get it. And we got a big supporting cast.
We're amply supported today.
Yeah, we got Chris Beige Whiting. Say hi,
Beige. That's Mark Beige Whiting.
Mike, why did I say Chris?
Because you're about to say Chris Whittington, but then you said Mark Whiting.
I'm here.
Say hi,
hi,
Beige.
I'm here anyway.
I'm just going to go. You're Beige, anyways. All right, we got George Reg Kokoris.
Hey.
You should just be Chris Kokoris today. Who else is... Oh, that's Pichu's also Chris.
Yes.
Okay, there's a lot of Chris's. All right,
and then we got Chris Rock God Winnington.
Piss off.
All right.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's do it, Ajgai. Come on, man.
All right.
Let's go. NPDs.
NPD numbers are go. So let's run them down. We got the Nintendo DS at 633,500. Wii... 289.5, 360, 175, PS3, 131, PS2, 117, and PSP bringing up the rear at 100.4.
Well, why is the PSP so low?
Because my guess would be the PSP Go is like all but confirmed to exist, and people were probably waiting to see what that was going to turn out to be before they bought a new PSP.
I guess so.
All those people have $250 in their pocket. Just said,
well,
no,
now we know better.
Well, yeah, right. But I mean, think about it too. It's going to launch when in October. No one is going to, knowing that that's coming out and it's not going to have a UMD drive, Sony's kind of shot themselves in the foot because so many people are going to hold off and wait to buy games digitally.
Yeah,
right?
You're looking at like a 4-month dead zone.
Yeah, well, I mean, they'll buy them. You can buy them digitally now and use it in your old PSPs, but nobody's going to buy the UMD discs. They're outright killing it early.
Yeah, they're killing themselves at retail right now. Although, yeah, I guess they are indirectly screwing GameStop, which is fine by me.
Oh, yes.
Right. That's fine. No, I'm just saying no to PSP Go. I'm going to get that PSP 3000 Dissidia bundle when it comes out. I'm going to keep on getting UMDs. Maybe I'll even get some movie UMDs for fun.
Oh.
Those are like $2 now.
Really?
I can go watch Superbad.
Hey, if you can get
Space
Jam on it, I will watch that shit.
Space Jam on UMD confirmed.
Hold it.
That'd be amazing.
Hold it for Sunday, boys.
Okay. Yeah, I can't. It's hard to restrain myself. We're just coming off the 2 hours of Barkley, so.
Oh.
Anyway.
But besides PSP, it looks like the story here is more of the same. DS is obviously doing very well with the, you know, the DS.
I have some comment about the DS, but. let me do the software here. So, kind of not surprisingly, UFC 2009 on the 360 came in at number one.
That's kind of surprising. That's a new franchise. It's untested.
UFC is huge, though. And
yeah, but they've
this taps into that Madden crowd. There are those people who buy an Xbox and Madden every year, and that's it.
Now they get to buy two games.
Exactly. It had 679,600 units. Next was Wii Fit, 352. Then right behind it is EA Sports Active at 345, which is pretty cool. Then UFC on the PS3. We have Infamous charting at number 5. Pokemon Platinum. Mario Kart for the Wii. Punch-Out for the Wii came in at 8. X-Men Origins Wolverine on the 360. And then Wii Play bringing up number 10.
Mario Kart Wii is still in the top 10?
It will always
Wii
be there.
Wii Play is still in the top 10.
Yeah, but here's something I noticed. So you notice, aside from Pokemon Platinum, we finally don't see Mario Kart DS and New Super Mario Bros. DS on this list, despite the fact that Nintendo sold over 1 million DSs last month, which to me seems to heavily indicate that a lot of those DSi sales were current DS Lite owners upgrading and not necessarily new consumers. Like, does anyone else think that makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. That probably happened.
I believe that.
I like Right. At first, people were talking about how Punch-Out didn't have that great of a showing, but it's on the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your expectations for Punch-Out could not have been that high retail-wise.
I'm wondering how high Infamous was supposed to be, because that seems kind of low, debuting at 6. But I guess it's a PS3 only release. So.
Yeah, it's number 5 with 175,900, right. So that's not bad.
Hey, Punch-Out did just about as well as Infamous, so, you know, look at it like that, it's not too bad.
Yeah, but that,
well, that's the new nature of platform exclusives now.
Yeah, but didn't both of those games come out mid-month?
Yeah, exactly. So that's not even a full month of sales. Probably they won't be there next month at all. Though.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Anybody know offhand any of the penetration stats for PS3 versus 360? Because I'd like to know how the UFC numbers lay out, whether more PS3 owners percentage-wise bought a copy.
Well, the UFC numbers are 2-1.
But there's got to be more than 2-1 360s out there.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess maybe a slightly better percentage of PS3 owners bought UFC.
Well, wasn't that Sony's argument a few weeks ago, was that their attach rates are higher, if their sales aren't necessarily higher.
It's a pretty
higher.
Weak argument.
Well, exactly.
They're, you know, picking for straws there.
Yeah, I'm pleased to see it that at least it's a good game that's doing well. You know, I'm not UFC, I'm not really interested in it, but I do respect the fact that it appears to be a quality piece of work, so... I don't know whether that's reflected in the numbers or not. It's like you said, it's a new franchise. It's good to see.
I wonder what EA's UFC will do now.
Well, it's MMA. UFC is a brand.
Okay, right there, they're in trouble then, I think. If they don't have that UFC.
No, because it'll survive on star power. Because these guys
have the three letters UFC. If you made when you make a wrestling game and it's not the WWE wrestling game, it doesn't do that
well. But the difference is, UFC is such that, like, the way mixed martial arts in general is set up, like, Triple H could be wrestling for TNA and WWE. They don't all just do UFC.
But even still, those three letters are important, I think.
I know nothing about it, so that's Ash.
Yeah, me neither.
All right.
Time will tell.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, so that's the MPDs. Let's move on. Let's talk about Bobby Kotick.
No.
And he is sad.
Let's just throw him off a bridge and be done with him.
He is sad that nobody threw the console prices off a bridge at E3. He was speaking to Bloomberg, and this is what he has to say. Kotick was disappointed not to see any sort of aggressive price cutting. Of all the things that the hardware companies need to be doing right now, it's recognizing the difficulties of the economy and pricing their hardware appropriately. Now, the rest of the quote, which should probably read, so that they can afford our $120 skateboarding game and our $180 band game for the third time in 2 years.
Dude, right. ActiBlizzard is fucking eating it right now.
Ugh. But seriously, here's the thing. Console penetration this generation is pretty good. I feel like a lot of people at this point who really want a 360, PS3, or Wii have one. You know why I'm not buying games? Because they're $60 fucking. And, like, there's, like, three coming out every week. I can't possibly buy all these. If they're $40, yeah, I'll swing a bit more or take more chances. But the thing is, if a game is not at least 8 hours long and like an 8 or a 9, I probably won't take the chance on it for $60. I'll wait till I can get it like cheap in a bargain bin or used somewhere.
Straight up.
Mm-hmm. Dope.
Indeed. And to be fair, I mean, GameStop CEO Daniel DiMatteo and EA Electronic Arts boss John Riccitiello, like, they've said the same thing. Like I said, I don't think hardware prices are a problem. I think software prices are the problem.
I think they're a problem for Sony.
Yeah. I mean, but like a 360 is $200, a Wii's $250. How much cheaper does it need to be?
Well, the problem with the Wii is that there has not been a price drop.
There doesn't need to be. They're still selling.
I know, right.
Well, let's talk about the Germans.
Why?
Because 16 members of the interior ministers are asking the Bundestag, which is like their parliament, to completely ban not only the distribution of, but the production of violent video games, which would basically put Crytek out of business.
Well, right, I guess they're probably thanking their lucky stars for having a studio in Ukraine now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, worst case scenario, they could just move production over there. I mean, I know they've already got some, I don't know if it's a new franchise or something, some offshoot of Crysis. I know they have something in the works in their Kiev studio.
Right. See, this all comes... There was a shooting in Germany recently that was tenuously linked to video games. Now everybody's freaking out over there.
I don't know. We hear stories like this all the time about how some country is on the verge of banning violent video games, and nothing ever comes of it. I'd be surprised if something does this time.
It's just.
Do you think when they do it, though, they'll make a giant pile of video games and burn them?
In Germany? No. I think they're a little sensitive about massive bonfire burning down.
Oh. I'm just saying.
Ooh. Oh, too soon. Too soon.
Too soon.
Yes. You know, 70 years. Not enough.
All right. Moving on.
Let's talk some more about the PSP Go, as we were hinting at earlier in the NPDs. John Kohler, the director of hardware marketing at Sony, was talking to Gizmodo about a potential for a PSP Go UMD trade-in program. This is for people who are trading, who are buying a PSP Go to replace an older PSP but want their UMD games still. Here's what he had to say. We're in the midst of putting together a Goodwill program. We'll be unveiling that soon because we actually think there's a significant group that will be upgrading from the 1,000. So we're looking at a Goodwill program, a short-term Goodwill program that would continue for years afterwards. Let me repeat the end. A short-term Goodwill program that will continue for years afterwards.
Yeah, that doesn't mean shit.
That's an oxymoron.
That is a non-sentence. It is a complete non-statement. He's just saying, we're thinking about shit. That's it.
Like, we want to make you happy. Like this quote, please.
Pretty much. Like, don't you think this is one of the pivotal things to figure out when you launch the same hardware without the friggin' disk drive?
I don't know.
As I said before, at E3 last week, Microsoft just wants your money, Nintendo just wants your mom's money, and Sony just wants you to think they're cool.
Sony wants your love.
Yeah, yes. Basically.
They're not getting it.
Then Sony's Jeff Rubinstein was speaking to Destructoid, and he did confirm with them that most of the old UMD back catalog games released prior to October 1st will also be coming to PSN, where he says, for the back catalog, expect the majority of existing UMD titles to be available for download via PSN around the launch of PSP Go as well.
Is this like how most Xbox One games were going to be backwards compatible in 360?
Something like that. Here's the thing, though.
Stranger's Wrath says hi.
Yeah. But like, Beige, like I think you were saying this earlier. Knowing this, I'm not buying any more UMDs. I will wait till October 1st before I buy another PSP game so I could download it to my 4 GB memory stick and not have to deal with them anymore.
Go ahead, Beige.
I was just going to say, the irony is that the only things I am buying off from my PSP these days are from the downloadable store. I haven't bought a UMD in ages, so... I don't know. Are people still doing that?
I mean, apparently not. You never, ever see a PSP game in the top 10 at NPDs. I don't think I've ever seen one.
I think God of War might have.
Yeah, like, that's, like, it.
Wait till they drop Monster Hunter.
I don't know if in America, I think that'll be, like, you know, the equivalent of Dragon Quest coming out on DS.
Yeah, I'll talk about Monster Hunter later.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, oh, I know you're excited.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
Anyone here excited for Left 4 Dead 2?
No.
I'm more excited after I heard some of the tidbits that came out of the floor shows at E3.
Well, have you guys signed the petition promising not to buy the game because you're mad a new one's coming out so soon?
No,
because something like 18,000 people have.
I try not to throw any weight behind video game histronics. you know, if it isn't people protesting the one language translation of English JRPGs, it's people protesting Left 4 Dead. You know, if you just want to not have fun, there are less enthusiastic ways to do it.
Have you seen their complaints? I mean, some of them are like some of them are quasi legit. The fact that it's so soon and like it seems, at least of what they've shown, that this should be DLC, whatever. But then there's ones that are like, the bright and daytime atmosphere does not mesh with Left 4 Dead.
Diablo 3, again, for the love of God, shut the fuck up! Like,
I was going to say, wow, Gainus says hello.
Yeah. oh, my God. Fucking staggering.
Play it. If the idea of, like, extra, like, limb dismemberment and cool melee weapons and stuff doesn't float your boat, just don't play it.
Well, that's what I said. You're getting five new movies, or whatever they call them in the game, scenarios.
Please call them levels.
Yeah, five new levels, four new modes, melee weapons, and it's going to be $50. If it was DLC, that's what it would cost anyway. Big friggin' deal. And then Gabe Newell said himself, this is a quote he put down in the forums, we also agree with our customers that there needs to be interoperability plan for players of Left 4 Dead 1 and 2, as multiplayer games are driven by the cohesiveness of their community. So if the games are going to talk to each other, and yet download it off Steam, and That sounds like DLC to me. I don't know.
I got a good idea. Let's get all the haters that don't like Left 4 Dead and all the people that feel the same way about Halo ODST and have them fight to the death in a big cage.
Oh my god. I would pay good money to see that shit.
Exactly. Once they're off the face of the map, we can get back to talking about reasonable things.
Yeah.
Yes. And the bottom line is 20,000, like let's say 20,000 people have signed this petition. The game sold 2 million copies. 20,000 is a drop in the bucket.
Blizzard,
they don't care.
Or Valve weeps, yeah, whatever.
All right, so
gamers
let's go to happy news. Yeah, I know, right? The iPhone OS 3.0 is coming out June 17th. It's confirmed at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference on Monday.
And apparently there's a lot of friction between them and AT&T now.
Oh, God, I'm pissed. So, yeah, listen to this. MMS messaging, one of the big deals about this new firmware, every other provider in the world will be ready to go with this June 17th, except AT&T, who will not be ready till end of summer.
Well, wait a second, though. But, I mean, it's still exclusive to AT&T, right?
So, only in America.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is, they're adding these features to the firmware, but AT&T's network doesn't support those features. So it's just
it's
a non-issue.
No, it does support those features because people who had like the beta of the 3.0 would call AT&T and ask to be switched from an iPhone complete plan to just a standard complete plan that has MMS, and it works. They just have to flip the switch. They're just not ready to do it for whatever reason.
Hmm. It's a pretty big switch. It takes about 10 people. It's hard to get
them
all
together.
It's
very heavy.
Mash the A button.
It takes a lot of AT&T employees to change a light bulb.
Yes, it does.
Also, at the event, they announced the iPhone 3GS. The S is for speed. It is also coming out next week.
The S is for superior.
Yeah. The big thing about it for gamers is there's a new camera, and it's got a better 3D chip.
They updated the instruction set from OpenGL ES 1.1 to 2.0. It's just the floating point calculations are a little faster, and you can do some fancier shaders, but that's about it.
Yes, developer NG Moco at least has said like they have no plans for 3GS exclusive games, and really no one will for a while because let's face it, there's 40 million iPhone 3Gs and first gens out there. You're not going to segment that market at least initially. What it sounds like people are going to do though is games will be able to take advantage of 3GS stuff, so they'll have higher texture resolution and things like that. So don't worry, it's not going to be that bad. Everyone's freaking out because like you can't upgrade it without paying the unsubsidized cost, but that's every cell phone's like that. I don't know why they thought it would be any different.
Yeah, PC gamers have been suffering the same thing for the last 20 years. So,
yeah.
Well, Mac owners have been suffering the same thing for the last 20 years. Every year a new Mac comes out and people bitch about it. Why is the iPhone any different?
Good point, man.
It's not.
It's
exactly.
Not, yeah, and they don't exist in my country, so I don't care.
If you have a Red Ring Xbox in your near future, you will no longer be getting the quote-unquote coffin to send it back to Microsoft. They are no longer sending out the prepaid, pre-ready-to-go shipping boxes. You will just print a label and find a box yourself. So
the good news is now you can actually literally make a little coffin for your 360 to ship it in.
I'm going to cremate mine. I'll send them the ashes.
Okay, well, here's a question for you. So let's say your 360 dies. You're on, number four. Like, if mine dies, it'll be number four for me. If I wanted to go out to the store and buy another a unit, what's the one to buy now? Is it the arcade or?
They're all, from my understanding, they're all the same thing now.
Except, like, different hard drives.
Falcon or Phoenix.
It's
or
all,
it is.
The new chipset is Jasper. That's the one that
Jasper,
I have.
That's
it's,
the one.
It's lower voltage, apparently lower chance of red rings. If you Google it, you can find like a site that'll tell you how to check what chipset you have before you even open the box.
They all have HDMI support now too. Right?
Yes, they do.
Just you pretty much just get an arcade and just swap your hard drive.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
If you were upset that Ghostbusters was going to be a Sony exclusive in Europe, fret not. The Xbox 360 version of the game is not region locked. Which I wonder who did that.
Weird.
Hmm.
So,
I just want to throw that out there. I thought this was amusing.
Play Asia loves me.
Yes. Dungeons & Dragons Online is going free to play this summer.
Oh, I forgot it was even out there.
Yeah, I know. I kind of did, too. I remember playing the trial of the game back when. I remember thinking it was okay, but nothing I was going to pay money for. So, I'll play it for free. Limitations of a free account include having to pay for specific races and classes, limited chat, limited auction abilities, mail capabilities, and you only have access to the city of Stormreach and its immediate vicinity, but you can go all the way to level 20.
Wait, did you say mail capabilities?
Yeah, oh, like letters
M-A-I-L.
Sent via post?
Right.
What are you thinking?
I don't know, but if you have to pay money for it, it's...
What does limited chat even mean?
Probably like pre-canned messages like Toontown Online used to have.
Oh, okay.
You know what? Wizards needs to get off their ass and produce a real Dungeons and Dragons online application.
Well, they were doing it for a while, and it seems like they gave up on it. I don't understand why no one has ever done like a straight up D&D computer network game.
Oh, well, we've been promising it for years. I'm a subscriber to the Dungeons & Dragons Insider thing, and when they came out with 4th edition, they promised all this pie-in-the-sky stuff about a digital gaming table and a bunch of applications that you could use to connect people from all around the world and play your D&D games on a little 3D rendered map with little images of your characters and stuff. That would be a lot more interesting to me than some generic MMO knockoff, so I know what they should be spending their money on. I think Atari still has the license, and you know.
Yeah, and they ain't doing shit with it.
Sad. Indeed. And finally, a public service announcement for everybody: Xbox Live will be down for maintenance on Tuesday for 24 hours, starting 12 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
COMG, where am I going to poon noobs at the Halos?
How did you know that's what I said this morning when I read that?
We're on the same wavelength here.
Yes. All right, so yeah, we have news.
News!
All right. Oh.
I guess now that we've already talked about it, it's olds.
It's olds.
Clever.
Yeah.
Oh
what
my
was that?
God, I should die for that
bad
joke.
Form,
okay,
man.
I'm done.
Bad form.
I'm done.
All right, you put it in the corner. I wish it had like, I wish it was like that one ESPN show where I can mute our guests if I wanted to.
That'd be sweet. Round the horn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I give you all points.
Oh.
Okay. So, game of the year, 2003.
Oh, Jesus.
This is going to be bloody, gentlemen.
Here
oh,
we go.
Oh, my God.
Okay, there's one standout for me, but we'll save that for when we get there. I'm proud of you guys for recognizing Metroid Prime last show.
Oh, so hell yes. I wasn't going to let anything supplant that masterpiece.
And you know what? I gotta be the alternate side here. I never liked that game. Never liked the controls. The thing is though is that I'm very interested to see how well it pans out when they add the waggle to it, because I tried 3, but I just wasn't in the mood to play the game at the time, so I didn't really invest a lot of time into it. But I really do want to play Prime 1. Because I hear so many good things about that, and basically,
I defy anybody to name a better final boss in an FPS.
That's very true. Mm. Absolutely true.
I'll just throw that on the table and take any comers. But Metroid Prime, yeah. But we're not talking about Metroid Prime.
Right.
We're talking about the next
2003.
Tell you what, it's weird because for me, I look at this list and it's a little early, but I don't see a game that for me is like one of my personal favorites.
I do.
I know you do, AJ.
Dude, what about Drake of the 99 Dragons?
Yeah.
Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball.
Hey, Pete's still playing that one.
Oh, hey, listen, mad props.
Yeah, give it up.
All right, I'm going to just read through my list here, then anyone else can jump in with anything that they thought I left out that they would like to bring up. So first off, we have Amplitude, the sequel to Frequency.
Yes.
Which I was just playing last week, and it's still awesome.
Yeah, this is like right before they made Guitar Hero, huh?
Yep.
They're so close.
This is Harmonix early days.
They're almost superstars. Then we have Beyond Good and Evil. Squad Mission.
What else is there to say?
Yeah,
it is what it is.
Talked about it extensively.
Excellent game.
Yep, everyone enjoys it. The first Call of Duty, how about that?
Phenomenal game.
Yep, yeah, that was right really good.
I'm still hoping those rumors of it coming to Xbox Live Arcade are true, because I'd like to play it again.
Crimson Skies, High Road to Revenge.
Yes,
yes.
I loved that game.
I have a bunch of sound files from that game ripped to a directory on my servers, or on my computer here. They were so good.
You need to send that to me.
Yeah, Good Old Games needs to get on that.
Yeah, because I bought a copy of the original on PC. It just does not work on Vista. Like, no way in hell. I've tried everything.
It's funny, the only reason... Oh, sorry.
No, I was just because, I mean, so few games had such a cohesive sense of world and style and place as that, and just everything about it was pitch perfect for what it needed to be. It's just, oh, it's so good. And I really, really hope that their new game, Dark Void, taps into some of what made this game so great. Like, I'm really hoping that game's good.
One would hope. The only reason I played Warhawk on the PS3 was because it kind of looked like it played a little like Crimson Skies. And it sort of did, but...
Without Nathan Zachary, Air Pirate, then you got nothing.
No, no, that's true, and that was definitely the reason that I am not still playing Warhawk.
I remember the level where, like, the Brooklyn cabbie who talked like Benny the Cab from Who Framed Roger Rabbit is flying you all over, like, Neo New York and being, giving you a running commentary the entire time. It was fantastic.
So good. So good.
So, Disgaea, the first one came out.
Oh, yes.
I tried to play that. That's just one of those games that it's too complicated for its own good. It's made to cater to that 1% of JRPG fans who, like, put spreadsheets on their wall instead of wallpaper.
Its own genre.
You have to be OCD.
It's intense stuff. We also have Fatal Frame 2.
Mm-hmm. My favorite of the series.
Yep. Huh?
I recently replayed it. Still quite... It doesn't hold up without a walkthrough at all, but if you're going through it with one, it's great.
Yeah. Oh, and
it's just bumping around in the dark if you don't. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Oh, nice.
Along the way to Fatal Frame 2, alphabetically, if we're going, you have I'm obligated to introduce EVE Online there, but I won't continue talking about it because otherwise I'll go for like an hour. And F-Zero GX.
Very good, very true.
F-Zero GX being the first collaboration between Nintendo and Sega ever. That's kind of historically a big deal.
You're a Wipeout man, though.
I am definitely, but I love F-Zero just because any racing game that involves going faster than humanly possible is going to get my attention.
George,
that's one of the few GameCube games I own and have never finished. There was some level in there where you were piloting a vehicle that had a bomb in it.
Oh yes, that game is fantastically
hard.
Upsetting. It took me a couple of days to get that.
I always like the 3D F-Zeros better than the 2D ones.
Mm-hmm.
I always like the silly half-pipe things and full pipes and just tubes that you were on the outside of.
Yes.
Oh, the absurdity was just lovely.
Right. Final Fantasy X-2 came out.
I've never touched this game.
Yeah, I haven't yet either. I gotta get
through. I'll speak highly of it.
Me neither.
Fine. No, it's a 180 degree turn from... Final Fantasy X with a weird Charlie's Angels, we're not taking ourselves seriously at all vibe to it. I like it a lot. The art's good. I mean, the story's kind of nonsensical, but whatever. I think it makes a pretty good bookend to the series.
Here's a question I have. What's Yuna's voice acting like in it? Because if she's doing the same kind of like quiet stoic thing, but like jumping around.
That's why it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to dissect it too much, but the point is that Yuna kind of gets pushed out from being the little shut-in that she was in Final Fantasy X, and then by the end of it it's kind of her story of self-actualization.
Okay.
So she's actually quite cool.
All right.
The end of it.
Well, that's good. Fire Emblem came out. I don't know what this was called in Japan, but this was our first Fire Emblem. It came out for the Game Boy Advance.
Fantastic game.
Yep. Great to finally get it.
It was weird to play a game where death was permanent and, like, affected the story in subtle ways, too.
Mm-hmm. It was a no-holds-barred tour de force. The writing is fantastic in Fire Emblem games. It really cuts that line between, you know, that the sum being greater than the whole being greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice to have a narrative that, like, just takes you sort of seriously as a player. They're not talking down to you, and yet they managed to pull off a really good kind of high fantasy chivalrous thing. For all the amount of swords and magic that are in our role-playing world, it's very rare to have a game whose flavor is like, you are a bunch of knights, like involving horses and lances and shit that, you know, when you grew up reading actual storybooks and fairy tales as opposed to the weird kind of Lord of the Rings manufactured culture we have, like... You'd think that just the standard knight would be more of a staple in role-playing games around here, but Fire Emblem is one of the really rare instances where you get that chivalrous thing. I'd love to see it more.
Cool. They also have Freedom Fighters.
Yes, the first and probably only game with a charisma meter definitely wins for me in that department. I love that. I mean, to be able to quantify how likely you are to influence other people and make them shoot at shit, that's a great mechanic.
It's definitely the first game outside of Dungeons & Dragons that were charisma. No. Well, no, I take it back. I mean, RPG, there's a lot of RPGs that have charisma meters.
Right, yeah, but I mean, for it to be a stat that shows up in your HUD, it's a core piece of the gameplay, which was it really threw me for a loop. Actually,
it's almost like Eternal Darkness's sanity meter.
Yeah, very much like that, because it's not squad based. You are controlling one character directly, but you're always going to have a posse that follows you around, and your charisma meter is going to determine how many people are following you and how closely they follow you. And, you know, if that starts to drop, then people are going to start kind of falling off the group or, you know, not being quite in tune with you. And it's a really interesting way of measuring your performance.
Hmm. Interesting.
Next up is Homeworld 2.
Oh, yes.
I never played the demo for this. I never ended up getting it because they took the interface into a more like the first game's interface was very hidden and contextual, and this one, as I recall, it was a lot more like just visible on the screen, right?
It was much more out there, yes. I didn't like the second one as much as the first one.
That seems to be the consensus, though, and it's pretty well divided, too. I mean, a lot of fans of the first one are almost slamming the game, even though it's not a bad game. It's just
right
not the same, so the dangers of fandom.
Next up is Jak 2, one of the more bizarre sequels to a game we have seen.
This is the whole thing we have now.
It was
where
dark
the second
turn.
Game of the trilogy is always dark and rude. It's their empire, but everyone misunderstands what that actually means.
Yeah.
That was disappointing.
Well, but the whole series has kind of continued the trend that this game set, right?
Yeah, and the new PSP game that they showed at E3, it almost looked like it was more of a flight sim kind of, not a sim,
no, really?
But like an arcadey flight game. Well, like half of the trailer, it showed them in the air flying around.
Seems like they're pulling
stuff.
A Banjo-Kazooie.
Right.
Yeah. You ever notice like the Jak trilogy and the Prince of Persia trilogy, the Sands of Time trilogy, were very similar in their makeup. How the second game got all dark and brooding, and in the third game they like made the dark and brooding part work with a light counterpart, and it was better again.
You know what? Sly Cooper and Ratchet and Clank have managed to do amazingly wonderful games without needing to resort to that. So
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just pointing it out.
He can keep his soul patch. I'm done with those. I'm done with that flavor.
Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga.
F yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh yes.
If you want to talk about good translations. Oh my god.
Anything Treehouse does. I think, wasn't Pichu telling me that the guys who translated that are the same dudes who did Final Fantasy XII?
Really?
Oh, really?
I can't believe that.
Actually, I'm not sure.
Same, like Paper Mario and Final Fantasy XII, same guys.
And, well, I mean, if it's that, then that's Robert O. Smith, which would be also the same guy who did Phoenix Wright games.
That guy is now my new hero.
He apparently has his own fans online.
From what I understand, they have no problem with taking some Japanese, doing the translation, and saying this makes no friggin' sense, and just throwing it away and rewriting it. They have no problem doing that, which is awesome.
Superstar Saga was full of internet references and, you know, pop culture puns and, you know, just great laugh out loud stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they don't naturalize more stuff that way. I guess it just takes talent.
Yeah, it's talent and time and expense, I guess.
Plus, it played so much like Mario RPG, which I loved, but it had that whole kind of interesting, like, the A button is Mario and the B button was Luigi. It just kept that the whole time. It was sweet.
Man.
Next up is Mario Kart Double Dash, which was one of my favorite Mario Kart games. It had the whole really interesting, like, you had two people on your kart thing.
Yeah, it almost made Mario Kart Wii feel like a step backwards.
I couldn't get behind the double dash thing, the two characters in one cart.
I didn't own it, but I participated in lots of like really great parties with a room full of eight guys all racing around on carts. So I think
that's what I always wanted to do. I just never had the opportunity to do it.
Now, did it suffer from Nintendo fairness in the same way that Wii Mario Kart does?
Oh, yeah.
Being, like,
all the Mario Karts
do. The damn blue shells. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of that. And, but it was cool because characters had there was character-specific, like, special moves and stuff. The courses were well-designed. I liked it. I thought it was one of the better Mario Karts.
Before...
What?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you were going to the next one. There were...
I am
going
next one, so if you wanna do something, go for it.
Yeah, two others in between. Neither of them particularly good, but definitely important. One was Lifeline for the PS2. That was the game that was completely voice controlled. It was a disaster, but it was a pretty wild attempt.
They
definitely
swung
for the fences with that.
What was that? They were showing like that spy game for the PS3 that used the eye and voice activation. I don't think anything ever came of that.
May have been the same guys. I'm not sure, but yeah, the Lifeline.
Oh wait, is
that
this
game...
the one they played? They played on Broken Pixels a few months ago.
Yep. I think so. With the blonde chick. Yeah, that game swung for the fences and just failed horribly.
Well,
but
it seemed like the problem with it was that you literally had to. It's not like you were someone talking to a human being. It was like you controlled her with your voice, literally.
Yeah, you had to.
But
give
the game
her
setup was like you were guiding her. It would have been like, it would have worked if you didn't have to say, "Hey, that monster coming at you. Maybe you should shoot it." And she's like, "Oh, okay." Like, she should just do that.
Yeah. But yeah, there was that. And then there was also Kill Switch, which was one of the first... Actually, it may have been the first shooter to incorporate a cover system. And was one half of the inspiration for Gears of War. I think it was last year, Cliff Bleszinski's talk at GDC... about the making of Gears of War was called Resident Kill Switch because the game was literally a mix of Resident Evil 4 and Kill Switch. And Kill Switch on its own, it wasn't so hot, but it was the first time I'd seen a game with a cover system, and I just geeked out over that.
Well, somewhere in the gaming chronology, there's an important point on the timeline for its existence, even though it wasn't a great
exactly.
game. Exactly. It's like the game that invented the double jump. I don't know what it is, but it exists somewhere.
All right. Next up is Prince of Persia, Sands of Time.
I think we can all agree a resounding hell yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hell yes.
I'm completely behind that one.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that I remember it coming in really late in the year. Didn't it release in December?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty much at the end of the month. I know I got it for my birthday. My birthday was December 8th.
Yeah.
It's probably up there in my top 10. I don't know about my top 5, but, you know, like, as soon as you picked it up, you realized that this was something special
yeah.
that you hadn't seen before. Masterful storytelling, masterful characterization, just a really... The atmosphere of it and the sort of flavor of it, it was so good that they were terrified to go back to that well for another two games. You know,
like, they couldn't really match
Arabian
it.
Arabian Nights, Scheherazade, they didn't even try. Like... The third one was okay. I did enjoy it, and I even enjoyed the second one, but I had to enjoy it despite the bad taste that all of the new metal and stuff left in my head.
I smolder with generic rage.
Well. Yeah. You know, Farrah is still... That whole story that they set up was just great, and I don't know, like... I don't know about the sales numbers, but I'm pretty sure that history wouldn't confirm that their transition to the dark angst for the sequel did them any favors.
Right.
I used to get into such heated debates with my one friend loves Prince of Persia, but he drives me crazy because he's like the only person I knew who loves all of Prince of Persia. He's like, the second one is just as good as any of them were. And I just got into debates with this kid ever since that second one came out, and it just drove me crazy. I can't even talk about this series without getting a headache.
the Sands of Time, along with Beyond Good and Evil and Uncharted, stands at the top of my pantheon of games where you can tell that the voice actors got more than one take.
Yeah.
Very important.
Totally. I don't even think that was the case in the new Prince of Persia, because you had the same guy who was Nathan Drake, but he wasn't as good.
Yeah, probably because they rushed him through it. I mean, you can tell immediately whether or not they just had to blast through the lines because they were on a deadline, or if they, you know, if they were able to go over each take and make sure that it sounded right.
Right. Okay, moving on. We also have PlanetSide, which was kind of the first MMO FPS.
Yes, I love this game.
That game was
Here's a big deal. When you, you look at Mag...
I really love this game.
I do. It's probably not as good as I remember. But the thing is...
No, it's
not. I look at Mag, and it doesn't look as good as PlanetSide. Because what made PlanetSide work was its absolute persistence. Where I had a friend of mine in high school who played this game with me. We played it a lot. And you would get into situations where we would decide not to, you know, to dick around, maybe go to like one of the owned bases and just hang out in defense in case something would happen. And it's literally like something out of a movie where you're standing there on top of this battlement and you look out over the horizon and like 300 guys are coming in vehicles and on foot and on airships. And you're like, oh fuck. And you manage, then when you manage to actually call in the reinforcements you need from the home base and then literally the cavalry comes, another 300 guys, and it actually works.
Aren't you exaggerating a bit?
Possibly.
Okay.
But it
was
friggin' huge and it worked like that and it was so fun.
Wait,
and
that was.
You actually.
No, go ahead.
What? I was just gonna say, like, I mean, when you manage to actually end up being, like, the quote-unquote hero of the fight, like, if you were the guy to hack the console or make a really big offensive push, it was so rewarding. I mean, that game was just so fun.
Yeah, that was around the time that MMOs began making a serious effort to try and make the world as persistent as possible to allow, you know, the players to have much more control over it, because that was my experience with EVE as well. And that's the way EVE is built, you know, that it really is that, like, yeah, you own some territory and you could just be chilling out, and then suddenly 200 dudes show up and start blowing up your shit, and you gotta, I mean, you have to scramble. It's like fucking Top Gun, scramble, go, you know, and you just have to defend it, and the game becomes so much more meaningful when you know that whatever happens is going to last, whatever happens is going to stick.
But you notice there's a lot of people right now in this year trying to find out what the next big thing in MMOs is going to be. And, you know, it's just kind of funny looking back on it now because we know we're 1 year removed from World of Warcraft kind of changing everything. Also, we got Ratchet and Clank Going Commando, which was the first sequel to the game, I believe. Yeah, because the third one was Up Your Arsenal.
Yeah, Going Commando started the precedent for their hilarious subtitles.
Yes.
Yeah, hilarious. And I always that is such a disservice because the games are so good on their own that they don't need dick and fart jokes in the title. They're just awesome.
They are great.
Okay, Sword Guy will kill me if I don't put this in the proper list, I think. Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne, which I'll get really into it later when I go over his list. So I won't talk about it too much now, unless anyone here has anything they want to say about it.
Haven't played it yet.
No?
Right.
No. Okay, we'll talk about that more a little bit later. Okay, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, or KOTOR, as it's more commonly known as.
Fabuloso.
This game is in my top three.
Let's not be dismissive about KOTOR.
I'm not dismissive. I was just saying, here it is. And now, I knew AJ was going to talk about it.
You don't understand. Go ahead.
The best Star Wars movie that's been made in the last decade.
Agreed. And you know what's funny, Beige? We were talking about, we both agreed on our Game of the Year picks, and when I saw that KOTOR was on this list, I had to do a double take, because this one, and also going over the list, I noticed that this year in particular had more games that I bought and played through before I switched to any other game than any other year that I can remember. I mean, I played through...
Well, BioWare's already got my turncoat vote, so I'm not going with them this year. But
the thing is with this game is, they first announced that BioWare was making a Star Wars RPG in like 2000 or something like that. And I just remember picturing Baldur's Gate with like a Luke Skywalker sprite, and I was like, "How's that going to work?" But just
that would have been cool.
I still to this day don't want to spoil the twist in this game, just in case someone
decides
to go,
knows the twist.
I'm not saying it. Don't say it. No one say it. There's a twist. And all I will say is when I saw that twist, I was playing this in my dorm room, I started cursing and just like flipping out. My roommate is like, "What the fuck are you doing?" I'm like, "You don't understand. Shit's going down in the galaxy, man. This is big." Like, oh, it's so friggin' good. I love this game. I've played through it three times. There is no other game of this length that I played through that much. It's so
Isn't
awesome.
Isn't it so incongruous that it came out on the Xbox as well, of all things? Like, what other RPGs of note ever hit the original Xbox?
That's about it.
Like, this is one of the few... How many notable games did the Xbox...
But this game... like
this and like Halo.
Halo was the thing that told everyone, this is why you need to buy an Xbox at launch. This was the game that said, hey, this console's been out for a while now. If you haven't picked one up yet, now you should.
This was the game that said, hey, PC gamer, fuck you for not having an Xbox, which was my response. And I didn't play it until they got around to porting it to the PC.
Yeah, and you know what else? Is that this was also the game with it that made me a believer into any kind of expanded universe story. You know, because, you know, I started to read Heir to the Empire, and that kind of lost interest in that. And then all the other novels about the Star Wars universe, it never really grabbed me. But after I played this game, I'm like, wow, this is... they really did this better than George could do it, you know?
Well, yeah, the thing is that they nail Star Wars in a way that the prequels don't. You know, they get the swashbuckling, bantering, ramming around the galaxy and cool ships, having adventures, pulp action. And in a way that the new movies just don't scratch
that
itch.
Yep, and Karth. And Karth was like, he was almost like a, he was like a softer-edged Han Solo, and he had a kid. And it was really
cool.
He's
my hero.
Yeah, different spins on character archetypes, and it was a fantastic game.
Well, here's the thing too. You just said that Karth having a kid. I just said I played through the game 3 times. I didn't even know about that till 2 months ago. I heard that somewhere. I haven't even done that side quest
before.
It may have been because I brought that up on a show in the past that his son is actually in the. He's in the academy to be an Imperial officer, and you're trying to. Convince him to go the way of the rebellion, or not rebellion, but
only if you're a good Jedi.
Right.
All right. Is your KOTOR gushing done yet, guys?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm done.
All right. I'm
just gonna say, Candorous is the most fucking badass party member that I've had in a long time.
An HK-47.
You know, any game where there are war stories, where your character will just stop and start telling you a war story that goes on for like 5 minutes. As you're wandering around, that doesn't end anywhere. It's just this pointless kind of reminiscing. Some good shit.
That
good
character
writing.
Worked so well that they brought him back in Mass Effect as Rex. He does exactly the same shit.
Now are you all done?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
Now you're all probably going to scoff at me, but I put Tales of Symphonia on the list.
Yeah, you beat that.
This was actually, you know, before the great Final Fantasy quest, this is actually the first JRPG without the words Mario in the title that I actually played completely through. But it's very traditional in a way. It's one of those games where you play 3 hours of it and you think this is the same old shit. But it got more interesting and this is the first time I was introduced to a Tales of sort of kind of unique 2D playing almost fighting game battle system, and I was really kind of taken with it. So I put that there for my sake. Next up is Beautiful Joe, which was a fantastic
game. Oh, yes. Henshin a go-go, baby!
I love Clover. I love Beautiful Joe. Apparently it exists as a cartoon somewhere. And I'm still bitter that the franchise ended number 2 on a cliffhanger. And now they'll never finish it. But yeah, Joe, what a great hero. What a great style and great series.
Right, it was just so much. It was so hard, too. It was fun.
But I like the idea of having an everyman hero.
There's a part at the end where it was very Megmanish, where I like fight all the bosses again and got so hard. Oh, but it was so good. All those special effects things, the slowdown, the freeze frame, the cut in, I can't remember.
Yeah,
that was great though.
That was one of those games that beats the shit out of you and you love it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, the last game on my list is WarioWare, which was,
that was huge.
It was big. Asgard just had to point out to me that Rhett's World was playing Barkley Shut Up and Jim Gaiden.
Yeah, it popped
Steam.
Up in my Steam alert.
I know. He was talking with me about it today. I can't.
We can't go. We can't.
We can't
no.
do it. We,
we
can't. WarioWare. WarioWare.
Can't
go.
Go there. We...
Yeah.
One,
okay,
two,
now
three, go.
I'm waiting for you, George. We're missing a very important game on this list, and
we're missing.
I've got a bunch on here. If we're talking near the end of the alphabet, I could string together Trackmania, Tron 2.0, Unreal 2, Uru, Ages Beyond Mist, Warcraft 3, The Frozen Throne.
Uru, go to hell. Oh, that's an expansion pack.
Wolfenstein, Enemy Territory, and Zone of the Enders 2. There's, okay, I mean, no, there's a logic. Most of those inconsequential, but
yes,
Uru, I'm definitely all about the Uru.
I thought Uru was a big failure.
The online,
the online part was a big failure.
I thought it was
failure.
Supposed to be. I thought that was the whole draw of it. Was the
no,
online
it wasn't.
Portion.
It was a single player game that was going to have an online component. The online component never launched, but the single player. Pretty fucking sweet.
It, no, the online component
did launch.
Launched.
It did launch, and then it even came back for a little while on GameTap.
I was going to say the reason I didn't buy it was because I thought it was all.
That's
online.
What I thought too.
I love Myst.
No,
was, I'm pretty sure it was marketed that way.
It was marketed did. That way initially, marketing. But then when they bailed on the online portion, they were like, "Here, check it out. It's still an actual game, and it's a Myst game in real time 3D,
in third person.
In third person."
Wow, marketing.
Yeah,
it really was.
Also, an amazing soundtrack with a licensed track by Peter Gabriel for some inexplicable reason.
All the Myst games have amazing soundtracks.
Well, this one is just as good. And a beautiful game. Like, one of the most, some of the most coherent atmosphere in any game that I've ever played.
Yes.
I still want the squad to do a Myst mission, and nobody
will. I'll do
that.
I'm on board.
Specifically Riven. It'll be a side.
I've never actually beaten Riven.
I'll do
so maybe
Riven.
We should do that.
Riven is the Myst game that spanks you and kicks you out the door. It's so
good. I will do Riven. I will get behind Riven if the rest of you guys will get behind Pathologic.
If we can get it to
no.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Oh, I'm on
Path- we won a vote no, once. No. It just we couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't get me to play Riven if you freaking threaten my life.
Okay, all right, guys. Is there anything else you wanted to hit me with?
Yes.
No love for Max Payne 2.
Yeah,
Max
I definitely
Payne
had that one
Max
on there.
Payne.
But wait, I have a copy of it. I got $2. You can play.
That's good.
I love aside from the fact that the character's name is Max Payne.
Well, I love Max Payne.
Max
yeah,
Payne 2,
but I just never played this one.
Max Payne 2 to follow Max Payne is a great game, but the interplay between Mona and Max was Uncharted before Uncharted was written. It has a wonderful soundtrack. It's got a weird, you know, like it suffers the sort of Scandinavian game problem that it's a little. I find that the Hitman games are the same way, is that they get a little weird in Indigo Prophecy-y in their later times, their later parts. But I really liked Max Payne 2. So I think it's really underrated.
All right. Well, what next?
All right. Got. Oh, sorry.
One at a time, boys. One at a time.
Oh, go ahead,
Chris.
No, I was just gonna say, but I think George is gonna do it. I'm just waiting for George to do it.
Jeez! Now you're putting me on the spot here. We did miss Geometry Wars.
But that wasn't really a game proper yet,
oh, okay,
right?
Okay.
It was just
okay.
Like,
okay. All right,
it was
fine.
On Project Racing.
All right. Moving on. No, we got Armed and Dangerous, which was the first and last and only game with a shark gun in it.
this was by the guys who did
Giant Citizen Kabuto.
Right?
This was Planet Moon. This was you had a gun that fired sharks. A fin went through the ground like in an old Bugs Bunny cartoon, and then when it hit a guy, a shark burst out of the ground, swallowed him, and then dove back in. Amazing.
It was great. But wait, this was LucasArts.
They published. Planet Moon
Giants
developed.
Guys.
Planet Moon developed it. LucasArts
okay.
Published. Yeah, because that was after
great.
Interplay
had a,
bailed.
Had a completely incongruous ending. But
yeah.
See, I couldn't get into it as much because to me it didn't feel quite as good as Giants to me.
It wasn't quite as good.
I need to go back to it.
But it was funny. There's also Bujingai, which is the one that we mentioned before. A very strange Japanese game starring the J-pop star Gackt. The only
yeah, isn't that the guy who looks
yeah
like
exactly. the only memorable thing about this game, which I still think is really cool, and I wonder why more games don't do it. The game didn't start with a splash screen of any kind. You put it into your PS2, and as soon as you booted up the PS2, you were playing the game. That was it. There was no slate. There was no legal text. It was nothing. It was just the game started, and you had no idea what you were doing, and you would run around, and you would just attack shit that showed up in front of you, and you would do that until probably about 2.5 minutes. There was, like, a timer. And then once you got past that mark, then it would fade out. Then you would see the titles come up. You would see the name of the developer. I think it was Red. It was published by Taito. You'd see, like, a bunch of slates come up. And then the opening cinematic would start. But the opening cinematic was a recording of you kicking ass for the first 2.5 minutes. And that was brilliant. And I've never seen any other game do that. But other than that, the game was a bag of shit.
Oh, I'm glad we bring it up there.
Yeah. What we got? Freelancer. Freelancer that was most excellent.
Yeah, that was good.
The GBA version of Jet Grind Radio.
Which I did not even know existed. It was on the same engine as the GBA.
Yeah, it was on the same engine, actually.
Isometric game.
Yes. PN03 for the GameCube. Which was both good and bad at the same time.
I thought you said piano 3. I'm like,
oh, no, no, sorry.
About?
Product number 3.
There we go.
Yeah, so the one with, what was her name? Vanessa?
Yes, it was the ass wiggling game.
That was the one.
Okay.
I played that.
Yep.
I don't even know.
You brought up ass, and I remembered.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good word you want to associate with your game.
I mean,
because
it wasn't all that great.
Ass? Piano 3.
Really, exactly. Really convoluted control schemes, I recall.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Maximo versus Army of Zin, carrying the Ghosts and Goblins torch.
Love it.
That game hated you.
Love that.
Savage, the Battle for New Earth, which was the first RTS-FPS combo.
Oh, yeah, I played that.
It was a team-based game where you'd have, on each team, you'd have 7 players playing an FPS and then an 8th player commanding them RTS style. The guys who made that eventually went on to make Project Offset, which is still in limbo, but looks pretty. Trackmania, there's a whole bunch of like seemingly inconsequential games on here.
Wait, but have we maybe I missed something? I'm getting old, I guess. Have we talked about EVE Online?
I glossed over it because I knew if I started talking about it, I would just go for days.
Okay, you know what? You're right. So then let me talk about it. EVE Online launched this year. George loves it. Moving on.
I do.
Okay.
You know, we didn't say it was one of my favorites, is Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.
Well, at this point, the whole Metroidvania game is becoming a little... I don't know if it's Game of the Year worthy.
But I 100%ed this one to completion.
Well, very good for you. We're all proud of
you. And then
you.
I had Koji Igarashi sign my GBA SP.
That's right. All right.
Wow.
What? Yes. Really?
Damn.
There's pictures.
There are pictures on the Exploding Rail Podcast blog from, like, August of 2007, if you go look.
Yeah, it was, like, the early days.
That's nice. I got a few that we haven't mentioned. I'm not going to mention Enter the Matrix, though I do remember the hoopla.
It was in 1080p. Excuse me, 1080i.
It was fun for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Nobody's got any love for Siren?
Oh,
I've never
there it is.
Really played that. See, I'm just not that into like the kind of survival horror like that, so I never played it.
You need a wife who's a survival horror nut the way that mine is.
Can we borrow yours?
To play survival horror games. Yeah, come on up here. Xenosaga too, which had a lot of promise, but ended up being the game you watch and play. Held that torch until Metal Gear came along. Metal Gear 4. But yeah, the cutscenes were literally sometimes 45 minutes in between scenarios. So it was like if you got an actual episode of anime for your efforts every time you beat a dungeon.
I remember that game having a huge intellectual boner for itself.
Yeah, they kind of fell off the wagon. Let's not talk about it.
Aren't you going to bring up Silent Hill 3, Beige?
That's next on my list. As the survival horror people. Now, it's no Silent Hill 2, but it was capable of, you know, expanding the Silent Hill weird mythos part that nobody actually
cared. Wasn't this game
about.
More of a sequel to the first one than the second one?
Yeah. See, the ones that actually try and explain what Silent Hill is about, I don't give a shit about. The ones where Silent Hill is just taken as a given weird Twilight Zone place and the stories are about the people that enter it, those are more.
Well, it's like trying to explain the Force.
Yeah, nobody cares about the origin of Silent Hill, but it was a decent game in its own right. But the last one I wanted to bring up that nobody mentioned was the awesome Mario Golf RPG.
You son of a bitch! That came out this year.
No, it didn't. My list said that only the GameCube one came out this year.
If you are wrong about this, I will hit you.
Wait, no, with it right now. According to me, only the GameCube version came out.
What have we created?
Jesus.
Okay,
that guy really likes this game a lot.
Sorry, Mike is right. I was reading that wrong. The Toadstool Tour was for the. Baze,
you almost got me killed. Come on, be more careful, man.
Sorry, that game deserves
love.
I'm in danger of hitting the Barkley territory again by mentioning RPGs and sports in the same sentence. But
That's next week. Don't
worry,
we'll
talk
about
it. The tennis one was really good too. Those were both awesome games. Okay.
That's okay. All I
I'm going to move to the emails now.
Oh, yeah, and okay. Also, I'm sorry, just also to get all right. Like, shootery on you guys, R-Type Final came out that year
well,
as well.
Actually, that's on Sword Guy's list.
All right, then I'll let him take that away.
So is Invisible War. So
yeah,
Tomb
I skipped over to Invisible War, because from what I understand, no one likes that one as much.
No.
First, we have Captain Carnage's list. He wanted to bring up Beyond Good and Evil. His pick. That's his number. That's what he would pick. Then he has Prince of Persia, mm-hmm. Which, you know, he said just nailed third-person platforming, and, you know, of course it did. Ratchet and Clank Going Commando, just mentioned it was a great sequel. He also has love for Uru, Ages Beyond Mist.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he was in the beta for the game, so that's
so
kind of cool. Well, good for you. You two maybe you two baited with each other. Jack 2, which he points out is more of an example of a good game going too dark. Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, which was the first and only 3D Roller Coaster Tycoon game. He mentions that was fun, but it didn't really... It was hard. He said he couldn't get a hang of building the coasters in 3D, and I agree with him. I never really got a hang of it either. He brings up Final Fantasy X-2, which he would put on his pile of shame because he never really beat it. It had the dress system in it was apparently a lot like the job system, which sounds cool.
It is the job system, which is part of what made that game good. Except it was the job system as designed by J. Manuel. So I had appreciation for the costume design in there. It was crazy. And they did it completely. It would be like the job version if... the job system if every character's outfit for every job was, like, meticulous.
And sexy. What do you mean,
it depends on how you feel about Moogles. I'm just saying, you dress a girl up like a Cactuar, that might do it for some people.
Wait, what job is the Cactuar job?
It's the mascot job.
The mascot job. I need to play this game now. Moving on. He says Final Fantasy XI. I'm not sure if this came out this year.
It may have came out for the Xbox. Maybe the Xbox release. To Wikipedia!
It was a 360.
Yeah.
Release, let's find this out.
Which isn't out yet.
Right, let's get this.
Final Fantasy XI Wiki... Yada, da.
Expansion pack for it. Unless Rise of the Zard.
I mean, there are so many different versions of this game expansion that it's hard to say.
The PC version was released in North America in 2003.
See, okay. There we go.
Is it Game of the Year material?
No.
I don't even like this one.
It's maybe
so hard
Game
like
of the
one.
Takes a Year material.
All right, let's move on. Enter the Matrix, which I don't think he actually means is a Game of the Year choice, but he just kind of wanted to bring it through because it was a mess and completely broken. Command & Conquer Generals, which he also says it was the first 3 take on Command & Conquer. Okay. Anyone play this?
Mm-hmm.
No?
No.
Asgard, didn't you play a little bit of this?
Play the demo or something.
Okay.
It's fine.
Well, he liked it. Evil Dead, Fistful of Boomstick. Worms 3D. Wait, I don't like Worms 3D.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't think he does either much by his tone. Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb, which he says is another Tomb Raider ripoff, and he never actually played
it. It was okay.
It wasn't
great.
Day of Defeat, then Unreal 2, Dark Cloud 2. Dark Cloud 2, I don't think that...
I have that, actually.
Yeah, but I would have put that on the list, unless I missed it.
It was good.
The next two I just omitted. Elite Force 2, which Star Trek Elite Force 2, so it was with the card. More Picard, which was nice. And then Jedi Knight, Dark Forces 4, Jedi Knight 3, Jedi Outcast 2, Jedi Academy.
Woo! God.
Yeah.
Did they actually do
that? No, they didn't actually.
We do that because it's hilarious.
Right, we have to do that. It was a game that structurally wasn't nearly as good as Jedi Outcast, but it still had the same basic mechanics, so...
It still played fantastically well. It was the same mechanics, the same controls. Still great.
Right.
Dark
Cloud 2... Okay, so apparently I missed Dark Cloud 2 before because it might have been called Dark Chronicle in other countries.
Yeah, it came out in 03.
Well, it came out in 02 in Japan as Dark Chronicle, and then it came out here in 03... Dark Cloud 2.
Yeah.
So, we did pass it up, so mentioning it is probably important, because I always hear very good things about this. I always feel like this will make it.
Oh, yeah. I finished it. It was capable. I don't get randomly generated dungeons that are pointless.
You hate when it's there in place of just real dungeons and you don't understand why?
Yeah, the only good thing about those randomly generated dungeons is that when you finish them, you could go play golf in. And you had a weapon that was like a golf club, and literally when you finished the dungeon, the game would say, do you want to go play golf in this dungeon now? And you could whack a little ball around and earn items and power-ups if you could, you know, shoot a birdie in that dungeon. So that was pretty sweet. But otherwise...
Okay, let's get the Sword Guy's list of all these crazy, obscure games that we won't even think about. Astro Boy the Omega Factor. This is a GBA Beat'em game, which I actually kind of remember from the era. It kind of got...
Wait, wasn't that a treasure game?
Yeah, it was treasure. Okay. It was basically a beat-em-up with that was, you know, based around Astro Boy. So, you know, it was like, it was that, and it was cool. Ninja 5-0. This is like it's like Shinobi with a grappling hook.
I heard about this, and this one was supposed to be really, really good, but a super short print.
Right, very hard to find.
Yeah.
Apparently a few people bought it because of the very stupid name. 5-0.
I would buy if it was a bunch of ninjas in Hawaii, you know, solving crimes.
Solving crimes?
Shit, I'd play that
game. Why would ninjas... Ninjas do not solve crimes.
Hey, this in the 80s, you couldn't make a They Fight Crime show that had
okay. All right. Otagi 2, Immortal Warriors, which was like the first Otagi, but betters and never backwards compatible. R-Type Final, which you guys, I think someone almost brought it up and thought better of it.
Like it very much. It's the only final boss fight where the final boss is two people having sex with each other. So,
nice. Oh, no, yeah. Irem is definitely, like, secretly super deviant.
Okay.
Cyclus?
Cyclus.
Oh, Cyclus! Yeah, that was an indie game.
Yeah, it's really kind of weird. It almost kind of looks like N+, but different. Like, sometimes the environment's more detailed than that. Mm-hmm. But there's not too much in the way of objectives. You're basically kind of just jumping around and exploring and looking at things.
Yes.
Okay, and then he ends with Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne, which...
Holy wall of text.
Yeah, he really, really likes this game.
Maybe I'll post this in the blog and everyone else can read it.
Yeah, Sword Guy can be...
He's going to get mad at me. Look at what he wrote down in big letters after it, AJ. Scroll down.
God, I have to... Hang on, I'm still scrolling. I hope for your sake I'm pleased with your coverage of this game.
And for those that are listening... Beige just said, Sword Guy gets verbose. There
we go. Oh my god.
Beige said
that someone else could be just a little long-winded.
We love you, Sword Guy. We do, buddy.
No, wait a second.
He is our specialist. If the squad has a specialist in obscure.
Absolutely.
But his lore stat is high enough that after a certain point in time, it's just speaking in tongues.
Yep.
He's going on about demons having conversations with each other and bargaining.
The dude, seriously,
like
Alice or the developer for this. I mean, he needs to go. He needs to go work there.
I looked at some of the videos he sent me, and it's weird because you look at the battle system. It looks like almost all the art assets from Persona 3 and 4 are taken from this game.
Oh yeah, Atlas has been reusing the same 100 demons for 10
but
years now.
It's weird because it looks like Persona, but it's not Persona. Like it's a bit more turn based. There's still kind of a reward system for like playing well and getting extra turns, but it works very differently. Like your main character, he's like a high schooler, and like weird things happen to him. He gets like tattoos all over him, so he's got this really weird look to it. Man, there's just so much he sent me about this game.
I will put this all on the blog so that all may see. All
right, okay. Gotta move on, guys.
Okay.
All right, well, here's his other games, real quick. Go through them. Advance Wars 2, Amplitude, Boktai. Why didn't I see some of these games?
We didn't say it.
I don't think it was there.
What?
That wasn't...
I'm calling BS. Actually, I don't look it up. We don't have time.
Okay.
Advance Wars 2, Amplitude, Boktai, Call of Duty, Castlevania, Aria of Sorrow, Deus Ex, The Invisible War, Disgaea, Final Fantasy X-2, Fire Emblem, Freedom Fighters, Galactic Civilizations, Homeworld 2, Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, Mario Kart, Double Dash, Max Payne 2, The Fall of Max Payne, Metal Arms, Glitch in the System, Outrun 2, Pac-Man Versus... Panzer Dragoon Orta,
ooh.
Prince of Persia Sands of Time, Ratchet & Clank, Going Commando, Rise of Nations,
hey.
Shining Soul 2, Silent Hill 3, Star Wars KOTOR, Tales of Symphonia, Beautiful Joe, WarioWare, Wolfenstein Enemy Territory, and Zone of the Enders, the Second Runner.
Breathe!
And his pick for Game of the Year is Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne.
Okay.
Yeah, although his runner-up would be WarioWare.
Wow.
Which he says is incredibly influential in popularizing the genre. But
hey, the man speaks from his heart.
It's still WarioWare, though, but, you know? It's like, you know, it's like saying The Land Before Time was the best movie ever.
It was influential, it created a genre, but it's up against, in my opinion, a super heavyweight for contender.
Why don't you check the Twitters, Edge guys, see if anyone Twittered us.
The only one I just remember seeing before is...
it was just Sword Guy yelling at us to do Nocturne more,
yeah,
wasn't
and
it?
MJ Pylon voted, I believe, let me find it now so I don't say it right, but I think it was Beyond Good and Evil. Oh, Twitter, where did you go?
Shouldn't you be logged on as it's going barrel and you can just
there it is. Oh, Wind Waker.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. He had
Wind
that
Waker
as
came out in America. Wind Waker came out in America in 2003.
Okay.
And for my sake, I wish that we could have counted that because then I would say Wind Waker. But I think, yeah, screw you guys. I feel like this is going Prince of Persia's way.
Yeah, I think so.
Do we have any dissenting votes? Because
I don't know. I still have yet to commit to either Prince of Persia or Beyond Good and Evil.
Beyond Good and Evil doesn't have an ending. Prince of Persia beats it in that.
Okay, that's
Knights of the Old Republic has an ending.
Edge guy, quiet you. We already gave one to freaking...
Prince of Persia has one of the best endings in video games.
That is true. I will have to cop to that.
I'm gonna say that my vote for Game of the Year for, you know, the Exploding Barrel is gonna be Prince of Persia, but for my personal Game of the Year, it's gonna be KOTOR.
I agree with him. I'll do that.
Okay. And the rest of us can just say Prince of Persia?
Yep.
I'll go with Prince of Persia. I looked at my list and realized that I skipped Freelancer, but I'm probably the only person who ever liked that game ever.
I like the
definitely
demo.
Throwing
I was never
in
able to
Sands
find
of
it.
Time. It was Free Space well, 2 plus yeah, Diablo.
Yeah, well, and the thing is that I wanted to play Freelancer because I loved Privateer, but at the time my computer couldn't run it. So that's the only reason why I didn't play it.
Right. And it's just, I mean, so many games are still so Prince of Persia-y, and they're still...
It has become...
Right, and just like, not so much like it made a genre, but it made sort of a device with the whole kind of way it did platforming in that game, and now so many games do it like that. I mean, Uncharted pretty much does things like that.
And
yeah. It's an adjective. You say it's like Prince of Persia meets... Like,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
And also, Prince of Persia The Sands of Time has probably the second best way of dealing with player death ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole way, even with pausing the game, the whole way, it was like, he's telling a story and all of that stuff.
No, it didn't happen like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fantastic. And the prince himself, one
he
of the best characters.
Very believable, and he is actually Persian-looking. So there you go.
And he changes over time.
Yeah, he becomes more badass
most important.
Later.
Yes.
All right, does anyone have the list of the Game of the Year? Edge guys apparently put it on a
my portable hard drive is bugging out on me at the moment.
That it's on? That's nice.
Oh, jeez. I don't have this list anywhere.
Can you what cable?
Down here.
This is great. Podcast.
Radio. That's okay. I'll kill some time. I can just rant about shit. I can talk about Eve for another 10 minutes if you like.
No!
Edgar, are you rubbing your microphone against something?
It's the cable. Sorry.
Yeah, we're going to cut this little...
Yeah.
We're going to cut this beauty out, so...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that is what I think.
Hey, you don't edit this.
Fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck. We're editing this.
Oh, no, we don't curse.
Well, not that much.
Did
that
work? I have to restart my computer. Shit.
No.
I mean, not now.
Oh, no.
Okay. There's a list that we repeat every week.
We've got to cut this part out.
Hey, guess what, guys? If you want to hear the list, listen to the last Exploding Barrel podcast episode. It can be found on SquadronOfShame.com in iTunes.
And please add Prince of Persia to the end of that list for 2003.
There you go.
All right.
Done deal.
You better edit that part out. There's literally just you making noises for a while.
See, now it's endearing to me.
No, it's not.
All right,
please.
Okay.
Okay, look, we're
quiz.
Done with this. The quiz.
Quiz time.
The Great American Edge Guy Gaming Quiz.
COMG! What?
I just thought of something from Kung Fu Panda that made me laugh, of all things. I see that you were eating. Perhaps you would like to eat on
my fist!
with us. All right, ask me a question.
All right.
Minotti Brothers.
Inspired by the games of 2003. Question the first. Name Jade's Latino AI from Beyond Good and Evil.
Segundo.
I am surprised that you know this.
I know it.
I actually said suppressed, which is a combination of surprised and impressed. Yes. And impressed.
I'm stuck behind cover?
Yeah, or that.
I'm suppressed, yeah.
Okay, Jade.
All right. Question number two. Name the droid from KOTOR who isn't HK-47.
Oh, boy. It's T... nice. Rock, you got this?
God, man, it's been too long.
I think it's T3 like... something.
Yeah.
I want to say, like, T1B.
No.
No. God damn it.
I want to say T3M?
T3M1?
T3M1.
Let's go with that. T3M1.
Right, you got to highlight to check it, because I don't know.
Oh, you don't even know?
How do I didn't, you know I didn't beat KOTOR.
T3M4.
Damn,
we were so close.
Okay, question number three. You can still recover, guys.
Uh-huh.
Question number three. WarioWare is known as what in Japan?
Yeah, it's Maiden Wario, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. That was an easy one, so hey, we're good. Number four. The game released as Fire Emblem in the U.S. is actually what number installment in the franchise?
Yeah, brother. That was my gut. So, anyone else have anything to say contrary?
God, do it up four.
Four.
Seven.
Damn.
What?
Whoa, what?
What?
Yep, yep.
Good God.
That was the seventh game in the Fire Emblem series. All right, question five. Your ship and amplitude is referred to as a what?
I should know this. I just played through the damn tutorial a week and a half ago.
A chakra.
No, is it like a beat blaster?
It is beat blaster.
Yes!
I like the chakra.
All right, bonus question. In Prince of Persia, the prince uses the dagger of time to unleash the sands of time from the blank of blank.
I was going to say, is it the hourglass of time?
Correct!
Yeah!
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, that's true. Everything is
then
of time.
Then he goes to the island of time, where the empress of time is.
Oh, he's the hero of time. Wait, no.
Nope, wrong one.
He is the hero.
Well, Link is the hero of time.
Link.
Oh, that's funny.
Of time.
Okay.
Prince of Persia, the Sands of time.
After Fortune Cookie.
Okay. Published by Ubisoft of time.
Oh, they should change their names. It'd be great. Okay, moving on.
Okay.
Because that was, you know, fantastic. So let's talk about our weekend gaming, everybody.
Let's talk about it.
Who wants to go first?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Pick me.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yay. we can't talk about Barkley Ship and Jim Guinan, can we?
Nope.
No.
You can't.
Okay, guys.
Broadcast incoming.
Here we go. Everybody, you're listening to the show, the Squadron of Shame is going to be recording a special episode on Sunday for Barkley, Shut Up and Jam, Gaiden. We're going to
episode one of
the
Hoops Barkley saga.
Tales of Games presents Chef Boyardee's Charles Barkley.
It is Chef Boyardee. I saw that today.
Yeah, it is Chef Boyardee. Exactly.
Okay.
Oh, my God, and I have so much to say about that splash screen, but onward.
I know. Are you
oh my god.
The remix of Space Jam.
Have you found the Slam Site Core? The upgrade from the Jam Site Core against all recommendations?
Okay.
Okay, I gotta stop.
Talk about Tiger Woods now.
I bought Tiger Woods with
like
Wii Motion Plus. I wish there was a basketball game with this.
Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Okay.
All right, talk about Tiger Woods.
No.
All right.
It works surprisingly well.
Yeah. This I said it on Twitter. I'll say it here. I think this is the best golf video game ever made.
Wait, what about Mario Golf Advanced
Tour?
Tell
me about why the Wii is so awesome. Tell me about why it's the different version.
Well, here's why. Because I played this game with my friend the other day. He's not a hardcore video game player at all. And if I was to give him a controller and say, let's play a golf game for 18 holes, he would get bored of it. He would get sick of it.
He wouldn't
even do it.
It
wouldn't be competitive. But we played 18 holes, match play, incredibly close game. I only beat him one up. There were just moments where he was getting into it, which is just, and this is like a stoic guy. But it was just, it, you know, we were getting into it as if it was a real competitive golf game. There was moments like, I got my hole in one, we freaked out. He got this really long putt, he freaked out. And it's just, and it was easy. Like, he picked up and played it and got a hang of it immediately. He was better at it than me for driving, you know? And it's just that sort of thing. Like maybe the other Tiger Woods, when I played the other Tiger Woods, I played him for the career mode and that stuff. This game I'm going to play more for my friends, you know, and like literally it will be more maybe of a party game, but just a kind of that sort of fun experience. Like the other things I used to value in Tiger Woods, like the career mode and the creative player and those sort of things, they don't mean as much to me as like I have Frisbee Golf now, which awesome.
It's a game unto itself, and it's really fun.
That works
and
so
that one too, with the Wii Motion Plus, you got the little hand on the screen holding the Frisbee. And you're moving your hand, and that thing's moving.
Right, that's a good way.
It's remarkable.
It's a good way just to show how one-to-one the whole thing is. But it's just it was just a lot of fun.
And then what the game does that's really smart is there's basically three control difficulties. There's the all-play, which is like almost what you do with your swing doesn't really matter. It's tracking the movement speed, I guess. But you can see like the exact arc of your ball, where it's going, whatever. Then there's like the standard control, which takes into account some of, like, the rotation you're hitting the club with, the angle and everything. But it's still, there's some assist built in, so that you're not terrible. Then there's advanced, which is your golf swing. Like, I just played through 18 holes in a career tournament today with advanced turned on. It was like playing a round of golf. I was always going right and in the rough. And yeah. I scored horribly over par.
I prefer to go with that middle one for myself.
Yeah, like, but it's remarkable. Like I said, I mean, it was my golf swing. That is how I play in real life, just as I was playing in this game. It was kind of frustrating because I'm not that good of a golfer, but it was really cool. And then what's really nice, too, is they did not gimp the online mode at this at all. You have the ability to play online tournaments daily. I mean, it really just amounts to a daily leaderboard and a pre-selected course. But they also have a feature where when actual PGA tournaments are going on, you could play alongside the actual tournament.
That's cool.
And it'll post your score against the pros. Like, it'll put you all on the same leaderboard. And if they're in a course that's not in the game, it'll just sub in a course. But, and you don't need friend codes.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. EA right. has their own thing set up.
Why does it say EA? Why does it say pay to play on the
I don't know why. I haven't seen
it. It's like a red Wi-Fi logo. It says pay to play. It's like dangerous looking.
I think it maybe means it supports DLC. I don't know. I couldn't figure that out.
This almost sounds like a game that a game on the Wii that Fiend could get behind. Because I know he's a big Tiger Woods guy.
He likes yeah, I recommend it for you, Fiend.
I can't remember if he said this was the year he was buying the golf game.
I think he... But, yeah, I know. I can't remember either.
Well, we haven't even touched like the party mode with the mini games yet. Right. Like, we don't know how those are, but I mean, it's good.
And
it's really good.
Obviously, the one drawback is it's definitely a graphical downgrade from, say, the 360 version.
But it's not that
it
big
right.
a deal.
But
it really
is. The trade off is more than worth it, I think.
Right, but when the PS3 comes out with its weird.
Yeah, and if
LED
that works,
thing,
then yeah.
Natal Tiger Woods.
Well, if you know if this works. I don't know how the 360. I still don't understand how with Natal you just like
you could actually get your golf clubs out.
Maybe.
And smash
but, like,
your TV.
This, like even with this thing, you need some buttons. You know.
No, not really. You just the buttons activate. Like I want to swing now.
No, well, you have to change your club. You have
oh,
to
that's true.
Aim your shots. That's the thing. Okay. I also played some of the Uncharted 2 beta.
Yeah, we both got beta codes.
How did I get my beta code?
I won one for you from David Ellis's Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. But we played, you know, there's the deathmatch, which I believe I talked about last week. It's fun. But we played a co-op mission together with a third random person on the internet. And man, was that fun.
It's cool because there's three of you, and you do have to work together at times. But when the enemy encounters happen, it's not just like Gears of War 2 style, where it's just like, get behind the cover. They're always coming from in front of you. They're coming from all over the place. So you really have to have someone watching the back, someone careful watching the sides and stuff like that. It was a really neat experience.
Is anyone else here in the Uncharted 2 demo beta?
Well, I have the code because I own Infamous.
So, no. Hey, Beige, we got to do some three-player
co-op.
Yeah, you need to get on that.
I'll say it again. The number of games that Sony has lost my sale to because they refused to include some kind of a headset with my $600 console, this is just one more example. Yeah. We can play, but I'll be silent.
No, yeah. All we need to do is boot up our 360s and use the party chat and that.
That's actually sadly
no,
true.
No, I'm dead serious. That's what we do.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never used voice chat on a PS3 game. I've just never done it.
I have a couple times.
I've just never done it.
I have a headset for my phone, but yeah.
Okay, that's it for me, though.
I mentioned earlier, I talked about Monster Hunter Freedom Unite on the PSP. I played the demo for it. This one, it seems to play better than the previous ones did for me for some reason, but it's so clear that this game is made to be played with more than one person. Like, if you
is
don't
have. Is it possible to do it online?
I don't know. The demo's not online. I don't know if they've put that in yet or not.
Hunting monsters with the squad, cool.
Yeah. Right.
Flying you all to Toronto to do that, not cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing
I'm
is,
not
like,
going down to the hangout at the mall with the kids play Monster Hunter.
Right.
Because
when you try to play this by yourself, you just can't. You start the mission. It's like your time limit is 50 minutes. I'm like, I just got to go kill one thing, right? It takes 50 fucking minutes, because this thing has so much HP, and you will die 10 times over. You just can't do it by yourself. You need other people. So if it has online play, I'd say it's worth picking up. If it doesn't, unless you got three friends.
I'd love to have a monster hunting posse.
Yeah.
I hope they factored that in.
The concept is great. It's just, you need people. I'm trying to think. Did I play anything else this week?
Probably nothing I want to hear you talk about.
Oh, no, I did. I played, So Chris found my long-lost 360 memory card, and I was finally able to play the Look Into the Future DLC for Fable 2.
How did the future look?
You don't...
Is this the future where Barkley used the...
No!
What it is there's two, kind of side missions where you go into these cursed items and do these fairly cool quests that I rather enjoyed. Then you get to, the future thing, and I don't want to spoil what it is, but it's very underwhelming and short.
I was kind of hoping... Do you feel like this is leading into Fable 3?
Not at all.
No?
I told you were wrong about that, and you were very wrong. It has nothing to do with anything.
I'm wrong. Like, everyone thought that.
I still feel like a chump for buying Knothole Island, and I won't do that again.
Yeah, I agree.
If you didn't like Knothole Island, you probably won't like this. The only thing in it that I haven't done yet is there's you get to go to the Colosseum, which I haven't done it, but from what I remember reading, it's like a new version of the Crucible.
Okay, whatever.
Okay.
What's the Crucible?
The arena.
It's the
arena. Fighting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember. It wasn't that memorable for me. Why wasn't it just called the Colosseum or something?
Because this is the Colosseum.
Oh, this is the Colosseum?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
It's different. I don't know. I haven't played it yet.
That's some good additional content there. Yes. Another thing where you're just in a place fighting enemies that spawn.
The last thing I want to talk about, it's an iPhone game, but NG Moco's Star Defense, which is the tower defense on the 3D planetoid things. Has anyone else seen this?
Design fundamentals class. We all broke up into groups and had to pitch game designs and write design documents for them. And the game that my group did was pretty much exactly Star Defense. And I had never heard of this game. And then, 2 days ago, it showed up on Kotaku, and I'm looking at this, and I made mock-up screenshots in Photoshop. And I put the shit next to each other, and I just we all looked at each other and were like, God damn it.
Somebody talked, George.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody talked. And NG Moco moved quick.
Yeah, damn fast.
2 weeks but, done.
No, it's really good though. I mean, in its basic concept, it's a pretty standard tower defense game. There's five tower types, aliens come out of one end, walk to your base. But just the way you navigate the 3D planet is really fun. It just works really well. It runs great on the iPhone. It hasn't crashed on me yet. And it has this really cool challenge mode where you can run a challenge, go through endless waves, and then you can post how many waves you did to Facebook and Twitter. And if someone clicks the link from their iPhone, it'll just launch the game and allow them to go right into taking your challenge, which is pretty neat. And I think that's the kind of stuff they want to do with the Facebook and Twitter integration on Xbox Live. So that'd be neat.
Yeah, that's exactly what I need while I'm working for a tweet to pop up that says, Jedi just beat my Geometry Wars. Thanks.
That does it for me. Who wants to go next?
I can talk. I mean, I'm pretty short. Mostly what I've been playing is the game... I've been playing the game that may not be named. And I've been... It's fucking sublime. I have been playing, I finished Bionic Commando, which I don't know if I've spoken about that yet or not, but I'm completely in love with Bionic Commando. I think it's great.
I don't think we have heard you talk about it, so go ahead.
Here's the thing with Bionic Commando, okay? I played it before Infamous, which might be a good thing, might not be. I'm a huge fan of the 8-bit Bionic Commando, right? It's like one of my favorite 8-bit games. And if you are a nostalgia head, there's a lot of service that Capcom gives you. You know, the music is all beautiful remixes of the original 8-bit Bionic Commando stuff. There's the unlockable Rad Spencer outfit that you can run around on. All the power-ups are the old-school power-ups. But the thing that I respected about Bionic Commando, I played it on the most difficult version possible. And it just fucking kicked my ass so hard. It was like playing Dante Must Die or something. And so there were large periods of the game which were just controller-breakingly frustrating. Because I would fight, sometimes the save points are 15 minutes apart. Or the checkpoints.
Oh, there's save points and checkpoints?
They're checkpoints. Mm. Here's a real thing that was a head-scratcher. Every time you pick up a power-up, or like a collectible, and then die, you have to pick up that collectible again.
Ooh.
So if it's, say, a collectible that you pick up from a death-defying swing over a bottomless kind of chasm 12 minutes past your last save point, and then you die, that can get frustrating. And there were a couple fights there that literally took me over an hour to do, like just a 10-minute block. So that's playing on the hardest difficulty, be advised. But on the other side of the coin, when it worked, it was sublime. Like, there was this boss fight against a helicopter. And when you're playing on the most difficult mode, it's almost one-hit kill. Like, it's very 8-bit in that respect. And you're being chased all over the structure, which is full of broken girders, and by this giant helicopter that's just blasting you, and you must keep on the move all the time. To stop is to die. You have to be conscious of where it is, and you're ducking and hiding and swerving. It's very hard to explain, but the rope mechanic I found so satisfying. I love the fact that if you could see it and it wouldn't throw you out of the level to grab it, they would let you grab it so you could flip yourself all over the place. I never really had a problem with the controls. On high difficulty, it was just the right kind of white-knuckle challenge that I was looking for. And the ending was totally nonsensical, but I really liked Bionic Commando, and I enjoyed it a lot more than I'm enjoying Infamous. I'm liking Infamous a lot, but even on the hardest difficulty mode, I'm just kind of, when I'm not just waltzing through, I'm sitting there and shooting a guy 100,000 times before he falls over. And, you know, I played Sly Cooper before. I liked Sly Cooper. I liked Infamous, but I liked Sly Cooper more. And Bionic Commando was just that different. That, you know, I really dug it. And it has serious flaws, but for the kind of person who likes it, I think it's a really good experience.
It sounds like one of those games that, like, I'm excited almost for the sequel, because I hope, like, they take the feedback correctly and, like, keep the good stuff, get rid of the bad stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, people are complaining about things like, well, it's very linear. I mean, like, that's fine. Devil May Cry was really linear, and it was great. I wasn't expecting a giant open world all the time that I could just swing through. They've made cool jungle gym environments, and one of the things I love about it is that it rewards you in-game for stunts. So, let's say there'll be a kind of mini, it has a lot of mini-achievements, so killing four guys at once with a grenade, right? Mm-hmm. If you pull that off, you get the ability to carry one extra grenade.
Yeah.
And then you get kill six guys with the grenade. And if you do that, you can carry one extra grenade.
Well, I like that.
And so it's full of stuff like that. If you can, kill three mechs in hand-to-hand combat with the arm, if you can, you get armor that's 25% reduces your damage over time. That kind of thing. So it really, there's a lot of feedback. And to be able to, especially on hard difficulty levels, to successfully live, you have to pull off a lot of these stunts, like, I don't know, shooting a plane out of the air with a rocket launcher while you're swinging. I mean, it gives you that extra push that makes you want to really push the limits of what you can do with the system, so I liked it. But this probably spend enough time talking about it. Just that the music is really awesome. So every time Ash Guy says that it has awesome music, he's correct.
See,
hey Rock, why did Steam just say that you're playing Zombies versus Plants?
I'm not. I just downloaded the stupid demo and forced me to go into it. Sorry, I'm totally listening to you guys for reals.
Sure.
For reals.
Okay. Well, I'll cut it short then, and just say that I'm still playing Patapon 2, and I'm still quite liking it a lot. And I'm glad that they carry all of your resources over from the original Patapon, because it would have taken me a long time to build up that stuff. I'm pretty close to the end now, and yeah, I wish I had some of those Patapon fridge magnets. But that's about it. I've been playing. Oh, and I went back to God Hand. I've been playing a lot of God Hand lately.
I thought you said you didn't play much. I think you lied, sir.
I didn't play anything remarkable, I guess.
Well, except for, you know,
gushing about buying a
computer. No, the game we can't talk about. That it's incredibly remarkable.
Oh, yes.
So, wait till Sunday.
Oh, that's epicness.
It's on.
Yes. Oh, George, what do you got?
Okay. Well, I've actually been on something of a sojourn, if you will. I've taken a break from it in order to play the game that shall not be named that has the greatest opening splash screen of any game ever made ever.
So agreed.
But oh my god, so good. But as everyone knows, I am stupid for Halo. And I'm actually in the process of trying to write an essay that logically explains why I like Halo, because I need that. Because every time
I love the writing in the game that you don't have to read and you can completely skip.
Well, yeah. No,
the hell with that, man. You don't have to justify yourself.
Here's the thing. The reason I have to justify myself is because every time I get into a discussion about game design, the fact that I like Halo is always used to discredit everything that I say.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I need to have some means of backing myself up, you know. Okay. But regardless, in preparation for ODST, I have actually, I'm in the middle of going through the entire Marathon trilogy, followed by the entire Halo trilogy, on the hardest difficulty settings.
Ooh.
I just
sounds like
finished...
when I played through all the Final Fantasies, but not as impressive.
Mm. Well, I just finished Marathon Infinity a couple of days ago. I'm like two missions into Halo 1 now, but then I had to put that on hiatus in order to play, that game.
B-balls.
That, yes, exactly. That, in order to play with the Octoroon great-grandson of LeBron James.
No.
Okay, I'm done. And then the only other thing is I've actually just, I've just borrowed my friend's import copy of Demon's Souls for the PS3. Action RPG, nothing about it particularly stood out to me until I found out how the game handles player death. Which is why I said Sands of Time was the second best way of handling player death.
What's it do?
Well, what happens to you is not particularly interesting. You die, you go back to a checkpoint, done. What happens is, every time you die, the game records your actions up until your death and uploads them to a server, and everybody else who plays will see your ghost reenacting your own death. So the game ends up kind of being its own, like, FAQ, but, like, you'll be walking through a level in this game, you'll come across a bloodstain, and if you stand on the bloodstain, you will actually see a ghost of another player who had actually just played the game dying on that spot, and you'll see how he died and what happened.
But do they integrate that? Like, are you walking through the hallway, and suddenly you see the body lying in there, and you're like, wait a minute.
Yes.
There's nothing here. And then you see the spikes come out of the wall and shoot him in the
yes.
head?
Yes. That is exactly what happens. So basically, every time you
die,
every time you die, your ghost haunts all of the other people who are playing.
It would suck to be the first person to play this game.
It would suck to
be the 100th person and have to wander through a hallway with 99 people.
Well, they place an artificial limit on it, but it's still, I think that's just such a great concept. It's basically like the spore of player death, which is amazing.
Cool.
But yeah, other than the game that shall not be named, it's just been Marathon and Halo.
All right. Chris, let's go.
All right, I'm going to wrap it up. I have two quick ones. First one is I finally had the chance to play Red Faction Guerrilla.
How is it?
I'd been pimping it for a while because I was really taken by the demo. I thought it was really fun.
You wanted to deform some terrain.
I did. I totally wanted to deform it. And then I found out that you can only deform buildings, but that's okay. It still doesn't affect the gameplay. So anyway, I played it, and for the first like couple days, I was really enjoying it. I was. It's essentially a game of territories where you have all these different territories, and you got to take them over, and each one of the territories is overrun by the EDF, who are the bad guys. And super generic intro, I believe I was talking to Mike about this. You have a brother, and the EDF kills your brother, so that's your motivation. That's right. Generic player motivation.
Yeah. Okay, if someone killed you, I would not be motivated to do anything.
I would not be surprised.
Except for maybe, like, take your stuff.
Right. I played through to the end of the very first area and captured that, and it felt kind of anticlimactic. There's a big shortage of weapons at your disposal, which I guess isn't a big deal because the ones that you have are pretty effective, but I felt like the way that I was going about taking over the EDF buildings, which is how it's one of the ways that you start to whittle away at their occupation, I was kind of beating myself against a wall because there weren't a whole lot of back doors to take. You kind of had to, you know, keep like dying and whittling away and dying and whittling away. And but anyway, it was still fun. I was still enjoying it, and I like the feel of the vehicles. They drove really well. The controls are they're kind of awkward because of the way that they're all set up. Because the R1 trigger is how you fire, and then you got to hold down the R2 button in order to change the weapon that you're using, which I thought was really clunky, and there were a lot of times where I'd be in a heated firefight, and I would panic, you know, because I have panic hands, and wouldn't be able to figure out which weapon that I needed, and I wound up, like, running away up the hill and leaving a couple of my comrades to die, which is so saddening. But
you jerk.
I know. But still, it wasn't hampering. I was still having a good time until I got to the cardinal sin that game developers commit against me that make me go, okay, game, you can take a flying leap. The next mission after the very first occupation, it's one of those, okay, we're going to put you in one vehicle. You have to get from point A to point B. In between point A and point B, you have 12 towers that you have to ram into with your vehicle to destroy them. Those towers do damage to your truck. But wait, that's not all. Then we are going to shoot like dozens of enemy vehicles directly into your path and sideswipe you at every turn. So you get to like halfway through the course and you find out that there's no real logical path to where all the signs are because they're kind of scattered all throughout the map, and there's no real easy way of getting around the map, and you've got these freaking vehicles smashing into you. It's maddeningly difficult. So much so.
Sounds like all the fun of an escort mission.
Exactly. It's
combined with unfairness of no maps.
Right.
You're flying through Superman 64 rings.
Right. And that coupled.
Oh, you
that
have
coupled
to invoke
with the reality,
that name.
Yep.
Well, that coupled with the reality that I was playing it on the PS3, I'd never be able to find anybody else to play it online with. And I just sent it back. So, sadly, ooh, Red Faction didn't work for me. Yeah. So, sad. But the last thing I did want to bring up is that I wasn't completely overwhelmed by anything that was announced at E3, but I was. It kind of sparked my interest whenever they announced Super Mario Galaxy 2 was coming out, because I remembered that I had the first one, but I hadn't finished it. And I just wanted to bring this up because it's something that I was thinking about. Anybody that's kind of listened to me on past episodes has known that I'm kind of really anti the Nintendo cutesy aesthetic. You know, I can't stand the Pokemon characters. I can't stand all the Mario and Luigi references and how they're in every flipping game that Nintendo makes. And I'm totally a grumpy old man about this stuff. But I broke out Super Mario Galaxy to play with my son. And that game is why Nintendo is where they're at. Because You get the controls, you sit in your chair, and you literally become one with Mario. And that you and that I realize that it wasn't Mario, the character that people love so much. He's essentially a vessel for the gameplay that Nintendo channels through that character. Because I wasn't thinking at all about being Mario while playing that game, because it's so brilliantly, I mean, it's such a brilliant game. The level design's wonderful.
I think I remember hearing something about how long it took Miyamoto to make Mario 64 fun,
mm-hmm.
and how many times they went back to the drawing board on just, like, running around isn't fun enough.
Yeah, that's the upending the TV.
And it took them hours and hours and hours, or, I mean, like, tons of development time to do it, but Mario, the net result is so much fun.
Yeah, it's...
to play, just a joy to play Mario Galaxy. It is a, you know,
exactly, and that's the one thing that I kind of wanted to take away from the experience, is that if you're like completely jaded about something and you really need to be reminded why you love games, you know, this game is a great reminder. So
I could just gush about just Mario fantastic. Galaxy for a long, long time.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to go down that path, but anyway, I wanted to cut it off because we got like 8 minutes before Bass turns into a pumpkin.
Real quick though, too, I wanted to ask you. You've been playing EA Sports Active, right?
Oh yeah. Okay, I will.
I thought you were going to mention that. I mean,
yeah, I'm really okay. interested in this too.
Okay, yeah, I will talk about it, because actually Pete's doing it as well, and I'll tell you. And the funny thing was that while you guys were talking about a game that I didn't care about, I went to IGN's website and I looked at their review for EA Active, and I actually agree with everything that they said. So if you want a reference, that's a good reference point. It's really great. John Davison did a really great explanation in one episode of Listen Up, where he said that the production quality is really fantastic. I found it funny when you create your profile, the default profile is a 30-year-old female that weighs like 120 pounds or something like that. So, you, I mean, like, no, in no other game have I ever that's been the default. You know,
they know that
exactly. The exercises are great. It really does a good job randomizing the exercises, and you can also pick from pre-selected workout routines. They have a 30-day challenge, which I'm not going to be able to start until I return from Toronto, because when I bought it, I literally had 3 weeks before I was going to go on a trip, and it would throw everything off. So right now I'm just doing things randomly. The band that comes with it is pathetic, and it can only really be used effectively by a child. And the strap that it comes with, where you put the nunchuck in it, ripped on me after the third time I put it on my leg, which is really strange. So unfortunately, the stuff that comes with it is very cheap. But the experience is really good. I want to say John mentioned also that it's not meant to replace your workout regimen, but it is a great segue to get you motivated into living a more active life and taking on more, you know, doing more exercises and things like that. So, and I think that it's really good at that. The one big thing that I can say, there are two big things I can say against it. One, the music is atrocious. So when you go in there, turn it off, put in your own playlist, and you'll be much better off. Oh, and the trainer, kill your trainer. Put it to where they say nothing. Well, I mean, just you can shut them up, which is nice. You actually have a slider.
No, there should be you should have to like go in there with a knife.
Right.
If you're tough enough, yeah. Like if you're fit enough to take him
yeah.
in,
it's a
then
challenge.
You can kill him. Otherwise, he gets to taunt.
Exactly.
There's your motivation.
Exactly. And then finally, the detection for the Wiimotes mostly works, but there were many different exercises where I was doing exactly what they were showing me, but it wasn't registering, and so I would... you know, my wife and son would be watching me do this, and like I would be slamming the remote into my leg or something, and you know, it would finally register, and they were like, God, you know, what are you gonna kill yourself trying to get this rep done? So, but it's fine. I mean, I think IGN gave it a 7.8. I would agree with that. It's definitely worth picking up. I don't know that I would pay $60 for it again. I mean, maybe wait for it to become like 40 or something like that. The cool thing is that I was able to get a hold of a replacement strap. It's a blue, and apparently when it comes to the exercise bands, they come in different colors, and the colors are pretty universal. Blue is a pretty good, like, tension grade, so I would suggest, if you've worked out at all in your life, you may want to throw the red one away and get yourself a blue one, so... But yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right.
Yep. So
okay, let's get through the releases, I guess. All right, we'll wrap this up.
I'm going to blow through them. Here we go. WiiWare, Swords and Soldiers, and Fish 'em All. I don't know what those are. Virtual Console, Genghis Khan 2, Clan of the Grey Wolf for the Super Nintendo. DSi, Mario vs. Donkey Kong, Minis March Again, which I would have if I didn't have to buy $10 of points. Yeah, it came out Monday.
Huh.
Xbox Live, Xbox Live Arcade has a whole bunch of Sega games. Altered Beast, Comic Zone, Gunstar Heroes, Phantasy Star 2, Shinobi, and Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
You should just buy that collection.
Yeah, all these are in the collection except for Gunstar Heroes. PlayStation Network, PS3 got Heavy Weapon, Gunstar Heroes, and Bomberman Ultra. The PSP got a digital release of Hot Shots Golf Open T2, and they released the PS1 classic Medal of Honor Underground. And lastly, Good Old Games has released the Neighbors from Hell compilation, which is both of the Neighbors from Hell games. GameSpot not familiar page with those, was loaded, but... and it went away. Okay.
All right.
Okay. They were kind of like puzzle games where you mess with your neighbor.
Oh, Prototype. Right on.
Prototype came out for the PS3, Xbox 360, and PC. Rock Band Unplugged came out for the PSP. Sorry, the whole page went white for a second. Grand Slam Tennis apparently came out for the Wii. Is this the one that's going to be Wii Motion Plus-y?
Yeah.
Okay, Tiger Woods, PGA Tour 10, came out for Wii, 360, PS3, PSP, and PS2. Virtual Tennis 2009 came out for the Wii, PC, PS3, Xbox 360.
That's also Wii Motion Plus.
Indiana Jones and the Staff of Kings came out for the Wii, PSP, and PS2, and DS. My younger brother got this. I'm like, please wait for a review. He said, no, I'm getting it. No, no. Legend of Starfy came out for the DS. Lego Battles came out for the DS. Apparently it's some sort of real-time strategy game with Legos, huh? Blacks,
Sigil
for Blade of the Exiled for the DS. Hinterland Oak Lords for the PC. It's original.
Orc. Yeah. You said Oak.
I said Orc.
It's not like you said Oak.
I didn't. Guys?
Oak, but I'd be more interested in a game called Oak. Sorry.
My Sims Racing for Wii and DS. Okay.
Wow.
That's it,
everyone. That's it. Damn.
All right.
That's it.
Thanks
for
listening, everybody.
2 minutes to spare.
Yeah, indeed. 2 minutes to midnight. Oh, God, I forgot to talk about Iron Maiden on Rock Band.
Buy
shit,
it.
I'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
That'll be my segment for Sunday when we do what we've been playing, if we even do that.
Yes. So it'll probably be short since we've covered a lot of
right.
it here. But yeah. To our listeners, if you want to hear us talk at length about slamming and or jamming that's happening on Sunday, the game is Charles Barkley's Shut Up and Jam Tiden.
Well, the full title is Tales of Games Presents Chef Boyardee's Barkley Shut Up and Jam Guided, Episode 1 of the Hoops Barkley Saga.
Warning, this game is canon.
Yes. Warning, the game you are about to play is canon.
All right, guys.
Powered by DirectX 10.
You can find us at squadronofshame.com or... at explodingbarrel.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/explodingbarrel. You can contact me at tokoto@squadronofshame.com.
Azga@squadronofshame.com.
Rock@squadronofshame.com.
Beige@squadronofshame.com.
And I don't know if I'm Regulus or gkakorus@squadronofshame.com.
You're gkakorus.
You're Regulus,
oh. I believe. Okay. Oh, awesome. Regulus right. at squadronofshame.com.
And finally, I do want to say that the poll is closing on Sunday, and right now, Homeworld
right.
has a commanding are, lead. So if you guys want to see it,
14 to Homeworld, 8 to Trackmania, 6 to Giants. I wanted to do Giants, but Homeworld was winning by so much, and I didn't want to waste my vote.
Oh, hard. God. That's
good man. Good man.
No.
So if you haven't voted yet, do so. If you don't have a squad profile and you are a Squadron of Shame member, contact one of those addresses we just yelled out. And we'll hook you up because there's no public access.
Well, we're still very exclusive right now.
It's very exclusive.
It's a private beta.
But we have more than 30 people on the boat. So
yeah, I was kind of surprised we had this many people in just like the thing. That's cool.
28 votes I got.
All right. So, all right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Signing off. Take care.
Right. Hey, guys, can someone spare me a Neil Shackle?
Hey, you either slam with the best or you jam with the rest.
Right.
Oh!
My Neo Shekels!